Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the picture, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Welcome. Hello, world. This is Pamela Elaine Lockridge with the Stop Child Abuse Now show, sponsored by the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. We'd like to welcome you to the show, and I'd like to say hello to Penelope, my co-host. Penelope?
Hi, Pamela. Good evening.
Hi. Penelope, do you mind telling us the mission for NASCA.org?
Oh, I would love to. Thank you, Pamela. So NASCA, which Pamela mentioned, stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, is all about child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA, to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first, educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Thanks, Pamela.
Thank you, Penelope. Let's see if our special guest, is she here yet, Penelope?
She is. She's got a 651 area code, and Elizabeth, okay. Is here.
All right. Let me unmute her mic. Miss Elizabeth?
Hi, good evening.
Hi, good evening. This is Pamela. Penelope's my co-host.
Nice to meet you both.
Stillwater, Minnesota, a returning NASCA family member and survivor of childhood sexual abuse and rape.
Absolutely.
So, you know, our show goes segmental. And we'll have you speak, and then we'll bring some panelists. It looks like we have a very amazing panelist.
Well, that's awesome.
So, you're a returning guest on the show, right?
Yeah, so actually, I apologize. I didn't mean to talk over you.
Okay. You pretty much know how the show goes, but for the audience, I'm going to tell them a little bit. We talk a little bit about what kind of abuse within that. We talk about some of the feelings you encountered, pain, mental pain, whatever kind of things you want to share as far as, if you've had any intrusive thoughts. You know, I see that it says here you have on your bio, and talk about when you broke your silence and, you know, the help you've gotten, the recovery you've done. You know, I'm kind of doing a little synopsis of how the night will go. But I know you've been in recovery for a while, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have, and I think it's a lifelong journey, so I know it's not over. I'm still learning things every day and growing, so I suspect it will be a lifelong journey, and I take it as it goes, just like most,
okay.
I'm sure.
I just want to tell you quickly, we have Mary Havens from Alaska, and it's in Arizona. We have Janice from California. We have, Cyril from Florida.
Sybil
from Florida.
Sybil, yeah.
And we have Darlene as well. So we have a very big panel. So get you to start wherever you want to, as far as, you know, kind of since you're so far in your recovery, if you just, you know, tell a little bit about your past.
Okay. All right. Well, first of all, thanks for having me here tonight. It's always great to return to the NASCA family. It's been a while, so I enjoy what NASCA is doing for survivors of all abuses and neglect that are out there, and I want to thank everybody who called in tonight and are taking part of their time to be part of the show and sharing my story. I was a person that didn't start my healing journey until I was probably around 42, and I'll kind of, you had mentioned going in segments, so maybe I'll say how I started the journey, the healing journey, and then maybe just touch on childhood, teen years, and then adult and recovery. Does that sound good?
Yes, ma'am, but could you start kind of just quickly go through, you know, when your abuse started and you know, when it ended? You don't have to
Sure.
make that a long period. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So basically, I grew up out of town. I was growing up on a farm. Folks had gotten divorced when I was roughly about 3. And at that time, we had to, I was the youngest of 4 siblings. All the rest of the kids were in school. But when my folks divorced, my mom, who had been a stay-at-home mother, had to find work. So she started a new job and was kind of in a tough place and didn't have much help from extended family or financial help or this sort of thing. And so she was a hardworking woman that was raising 4 kids on her own, and she entrusted me to stay with a neighbor at the time. And that's really where some of the abuses started. The first abuse, I was 3-4 years old at that time. And unfortunately, I'm still trying to learn more about the 4-year-old situation. And so, but what I do know is that when I went there, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little stuck on the information here, but I guess what happened originally was the wife or the babysitter at that time could be real verbally abusive. Oftentimes I'd be locked up in an upstairs bedroom of the house. During that time, I would soil my pants. I have memories of me and her daughter actually running out to, it got so bad at one point that I knew that if I was caught again soiling my pants, and I think looking back after going through years of trauma therapy, I know that, you know, part of that, you know, had to do with the fact of the abuse and what had been going on also in my home as far as conflict and stress of 2 parents that are divorcing and that sort of thing. But basically the gist of it was there was times where I'd be locked upstairs and I'd soil my pants. And there was one occasion I was so fearful that something bad was going to be brought on by the soiling of my pants that the little girl that was also there, the daughter of the woman who was watching me, her and I, we would run out in the field and literally just bury my pants and my underwear in hopes that the mother wouldn't find out, because if she did, it wasn't going to fare well for me. So I think at a real young age, I learned that I needed to really observe how people were, how the adults were around me, but it was still more than what a four-year-old can really deal with. It got to the point that, you know, whenever my mom was trying to drop me off, she'd be dropping me off, and I'd just be crying. I'd be sobbing, telling her, please don't make, you know, please don't make me go, crying hysterically. Right. And, of course, my mom, back at that time, you know, that parents weren't taught some of the things that they are today. I mean, we have a hard enough time talking about abuse today, but back then nobody talked about those sort of things. Yeah. And so I'm sure that, you know, because I was a sensitive kid and because, you know, she was kind of in that position of, you know, hey, I got to get to work. And she was a very kind, yeah, loving mother, but, you know, I tried to show the signs that it wasn't that I was trying to show signs. That's what four-year-olds do, is they don't have the words to put in that there's abuse going on and this sort of thing. So I did what four-year-olds do.
Right. So let's go up to 10 years. The first, you know, I want to kind of cover the first decade. And then the second,
sure,
decade.
Okay.
You know, that way I can go through it quickly.
All right. So fast forward, eventually I was taken out of that situation, was put into a better situation. From that, I think there were certain things that, you know, certainly as a child I took away. I started to cling to my mom a lot. I didn't like being away from her, that sort of thing. But I went on to getting into school, and then about 13, when I was 13 years old, I had a girlfriend of mine who had an adult brother, and one night I was molested by a brother, her brother, who was in his 20s at that time. I was 13. I didn't know what was really happening at the time. And there's parts of that I actually disassociated from. So there's parts that I remember very clear, but there's parts that I totally disassociate completely and blacked out. Because of those abuses, that one went on for about a year until I think I reached kind of this age where I was no longer kind of prime real estate for him. I hate to put it that way, but I think it was at the point that, you know, I started to develop, started to menstruate, and I think at that point I wasn't, you know, what was in his profile of who he'd want to abuse. So eventually that stopped. Then went on, you know, with life. And when I was approximately 14, 15 years old, the girlfriend and I, we had met up with a couple of older men. And I think at the time we thought, you know, hey, they think we're, you know, big girls, or, you know, we felt proud of ourselves that we were kind of got asked out by these men. And I'm not sure what their ages were at the time, but I'm thinking later 20s, early 30s, probably early or later 20s. But they were somebody that my older sister had actually warned me about and said to stay away. And for whatever reason, I think just because I was a teen, I didn't, and felt honored that we were getting attention by these older boys. And they asked, or well, men actually, and they had asked us to go to a party. And so The two of us went. My girlfriend was actually a year younger than I was. We went to the party. They gave us alcohol, gave us drugs, and next thing I knew, we were being driven into, yeah, just take a minute.
Sure.
Not sure why that just hit me like that, but probably because this one in particular had a big effect on me, because before the abuses were just me. With this situation, it was a girlfriend that was younger, and so there's a lot of blame and shame and everything else. I mean, I already had shame from the 13-year-old experience, but basically we were both driven into a wooded area. The cars were parked, and at a certain point, she was up in the front seat with one individual on top of her. I had an individual on top of me. I don't ever remember getting out of the car that night. I found out not till years later, till I was in my 40s, what exactly happened. Told later on in my 40s, when I started to have flashbacks and that sort of thing, you know, I called up this friend. We had never talked about it. We never addressed it. Never spoke of it, nothing. And that wasn't until I was in my 40s, and I'll talk more about that later,
okay.
But basically not until I was in my 40s that we actually, I started to question that.
Excuse me, Elizabeth. Let's give you a little breather right now, okay?
Okay.
Just ask you to relax. And, you know, what you don't want to or feel right or comfortable about exposing, please, you know, just be aware of your boundaries, okay?
Sure.
Because we don't want
Well, thank you.
We're here to comfort you, okay? So we have a large panel. Can we stop now and go down the panel?
Absolutely.
Okay. Penelope?
Hey, Pamela.
Hi.
And Elizabeth. Elizabeth, wow. First of all, I just, you know, wish to say welcome back to the show. I believe it's your third time, as you had mentioned to me, and I believe also to Pamela, probably in a different conversation, but it doesn't get any easier, does it? And I want to thank you for sharing your story, because I think every time we share it, you know, we relive those events. And we give a part of ourselves, not only to, you know, to share our story, but to help encourage others that may be contemplating speaking for the first time to do the same. And so I know it's your third time. I just think that you're so brave. And I just wish to thank you. And
oh, thank you.
Yeah, no, really, truly. And as Pamela mentioned, we've got a really robust panel, to support you, in fact, I wanted to also mention, which I didn't make it very clear, but Mary Havens from Alaska, she's actually our Alaska ambassador calling in tonight. So I'm not sure if Sybil's an ambassador or not, because I wasn't able to get that far with her, because I didn't want to miss out on any of your story, so I was pretty short with the other panelists that called in. But a few little small parts, because as a co-host, we do welcome in the other callers, and so from what I understand is that your abuse started at the age of 4.
Yes.
And just to clarify for me, that was within the neighborhood. Was it within your home, or was it within your social surroundings?
Social surroundings. So, I mean, everybody that were violators, I knew in some way, but not within the family unit.
Okay. That's what I thought that I understood. I just wanted to make sure that I was clear on that. And then, of course, the rape that you speak of was you were in your early teenage years, and you were with a peer, and you were both abused. And so, you know, I don't have any questions. I just think it's so brave to come forward and tell about these things. And I'm, you know, obviously we know from being adult survivors ourselves, it's a lifelong journey to address and to heal from these wounds that, you know, happen. And they happen, you know, in our formative years. But, you know, I just appreciate what you've shared so far. And, you know, Pamela stated, we both have your back. And as you know, you've done the show, like I keep saying, it was your third time. So it's not your maiden voyage, but anything that you're not, you know, you're not just feeling, you can share at the moment. It's fine. This is your show. So we just appreciate you being here.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You know, it's funny. Yeah. I don't care how many times you go through your story. You know, I can sit and I can go through it and not, you know, it's funny. I can go through a story one night and maybe not have it affect me a certain way. And then other nights I can go through the story like tonight and I have to take a pause for a few minutes and kind of get my grounding a little bit. And that sort of thing. I think, you know, you just never know. But thankfully, yeah. I'm in a much better place now. So,
yeah. And I think sometimes that, you know, there are things that are going on around us that, you know, we might have some glimpse of, and we don't really, they do affect us in that way. So a story that we could tell on one day, you know, it's not coming out the same on the next day. And I think there are all these triggers that are out there. And I think the longer that we heal and work on them, we become better. But sometimes I don't even know why I'm good one day and not good the next day. I just figure there are things out there, and, you know, you have to love yourself and be kind to yourself and know that tomorrow is another day, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And thank you, Pamela, for giving me the opportunity, Elizabeth.
You're very welcome, Penelope. We're going to go to Darlene from Tennessee. Darlene, you're on with Elizabeth.
Hello, I agree with you. It's tough. You never know how you're going to react to when you go to tell your story. Sometimes it seems like it's smooth sailing, you know, like you've been over it so many times that you're not going to have any kind of emotion to it because you kind of feel like you've, you know, solved it or whatever. And then that other times it just seems to make you cry, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
If that's where you're at, I understand completely. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your story. I'm sorry you had to go through the kind of stuff as well.
Thank you, Darlene. I appreciate your support. That was really kind.
Quite welcome.
Thank you, Darlene. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Let's go to Mary Haven. She's Alaska ambassador, but she lives in Arizona. Is that right, Mary?
Hello. Actually, no, I'm in Arizona to help my friend who had some major surgery, but I have been in Minnesota, stuck there with the pandemic, and I am the Alaska ambassador because that's technically my residence. But I met Elizabeth through Blog Talk Radio, through Bill Murray, and so I've known Elizabeth for probably 3 years now, and I'm an admirer of hers, and when I found out she was going to be on tonight, I definitely wanted to come on and support her. I did not know her story until recently, and it brought me to tears, and even tonight, hearing her, that emotion that we get when we tell our story and the surprise that will sneak in on us at times when we don't expect it. But I can tell you that Elizabeth is someone that I really, really appreciate and support and look forward to working with her with Empower Survivors. I know that this is very hard to tell a story, but she's stellar. She is such an encouragement and has helped me through a lot of stuff in the short time that we've known one another. So I just want her to know that I'm here in support of her, and Keep telling your story, Elizabeth. It helps so many people.
Gosh, Mary, thank you so much. You got me in tears here. What the heck? Thank you. I appreciate. Yes, I know Mary well, and I'm very honored to know Mary. Thank you so much, Mary.
You're welcome.
We feel the love here at NACA.
Yeah, I guess. Oh, my goodness.
Thank you, Mary. Mary, this is Pamela. Thank you so much. Okay. Let's go to Janice in California.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Janice.
Yeah, I'm here. Hi, Elizabeth.
Okay.
This is the first time I've heard your story, so I applaud you for coming on again and telling it, and I know how difficult it can be. I think I need to continue hearing the rest of your story tonight before I would have any questions or comments, but I do think it's great that you've come forward and that you want to help others with telling what has happened to you.
Thank you so much, Janice. I appreciate your support.
Thank you, Ms. Janice. All right, we're going to go to Sybil in Florida. Sybil, you're on with Elizabeth.
Hi, Elizabeth. I just want to say thank you. I admire your work so much, and you seem so attuned to survivors' needs, and I appreciate all the educational information that you provide, and I especially appreciate the positive just the positive environment that you provide with so many good tools. And I just want to say thank you, and I'd like to yield the rest of my time because I just want to hear every single thing you have to say.
Thank you so much, Sybil. I saw your post saying that you were going to come on, so I was excited about that. Thank you.
I'm excited, too, because I will tell you, I'm just like my grandma. I fall asleep in my chair now, and I miss everything good. It comes on after dark. You know, I'll be sitting there waiting, and it's coming on in 30 minutes, and, oh, I'm asleep. So, yay, I'm awake. Okay, and I'm getting off now so I can listen to you. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Sybil. All right, we're going to Mary Ellen in New York, and that's the last panelist for, and then you'll go back to tell your story, Mary Ellen. I mean,
okay.
Elizabeth. Okay.
Hi, Elizabeth. Yep. Hello. Nice to be here tonight. I have followed you on Facebook and watched some of your videos. Your work is amazing. Thank you so much for everything you're doing. I think the first time I caught glimpse of some of your work was on this show a couple years back. So every now and then I keep checking in to see where you're at and what you're up to, and I'm just always impressed at the things that I see. So I want to thank you for everything, and I'm happy to be here tonight to listen to you share your story.
Gosh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Thank you.
You're so welcome.
You know,
thank
that's
you,
one
Mary
thing Ellen. That, oh, I apologize.
No,
I was
going to
say that's one thing that I think is really still one of my hardest things is to accept praise. And it's something that I'm still working on to this day is receiving that. And I just thank you all so much for the kind words and the support. That's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
So at this
work. Okay. So back to you, Miss Elizabeth. I just want to say that just you have such support, and I hope that, you know, going through your story that you feel it, that, you know, you're not alone. We're here with
Absolutely.
You.
Thank you. I really do appreciate it. So I think we left
so,
off.
Well, can I ask
what
you a
was
question
that? Real quick? Oh, absolutely.
By the time we got to the end of the story so far, have you been raped twice or not?
just once.
Yes. The 14-15 situation was molestation. The other was rape. The 4-year-old situation was physical, and there was there's some memories of what I think might be molestation, but they aren't clear enough for me to be able to. I want to be very careful about saying too much about that situation, only because some of those memories I'm still working with. In that sort of thing. So I want to, the 4-year-old, the mental, emotional, physical abuse of the 4-year-old is that I know for sure. The molestation is clouded. And so I still, that's something I'm working on, is that situation.
Okay.
So basically after that, sure, I'll just start up from where we left off. So basically, like I said, I never spoke to my friend about it again. She went on her way. I went on mine. We continued on into high school. And after that situation, I started to get into drugs and alcohol. I became very promiscuous. I had really bad self-esteem. I started to think that, I firmly believed that I was garbage, that I was never going to amount to anything, that I was dirty. I couldn't understand why going through life, it seemed like I had some type of a target on my head that said use and abuse me. And so I really struggled during those years a lot. Eventually, I ended up getting pregnant. I lost the baby, and that was when I was 16. Moving forward, I ended up getting into drugs and alcohol and kind of started hanging around an older gal who was, again, in her 20s. She had a 40-something-year-old brother that she lived with, and through the drugs and this sort of thing, I befriended her and would then a lot of times go stay the weekend at her place with her older brother who was in his 40s. We were always friends, and one particular night we were going to get together. There was a tournament, you know, back in those days, people didn't really monitor, you know, 16-year-olds or 17-year-olds going into the bars and that sort of thing, and you could slip in and have a few drinks. And we heard that there was this pool tournament, and, of course, she was old enough to get in there legally, but she helped me get in. We spent the night drinking, doing drugs, and by that time, I had befriended her brother quite a bit because he ended up at a certain point supplying me with cocaine. And that was something I always swore that I'd stay away from. I did pot, I did shrooms, I did everything else, but I always told myself I wouldn't get into cocaine. And one night in particular, I started, I went through months, and I'm not sure if it was a year or how long it was, but basically really getting into cocaine and ended up finding out that he was a dealer. And there was a certain point in that I knew that he was attracted to me, but I told him, of course, being my age, I was repulsed because he was 40-something years old, and I'm 17. And So I had, you know, always kind of, I always felt something, but I always thought that the knowledge was there that nothing would come out of that because I was a minor, he was older and this sort of thing. And so the night came where I was at this pool tournament with his sister. We had spent the night doing drugs, alcohol, all this, and at a certain point, I started to feel like I just had had too much and this sort of thing. So I asked if she could bring me home. And when I, and by home, I mean back to her place where she was living with her brother at the time. And she dropped me off, and she went back out again, and I was sleeping on the couch. And at a certain point, her brother told me that I need to come into his bedroom, and I was drunk and everything else, and I said, leave me alone. And by that time, because he had supplied me with cocaine for so long and drugs, I think there was a certain part in him that felt that there's a certain thing owed to him. And that night it came out, and I told him basically that, well, this isn't very nice, but eventually he came out. He started yelling at me, telling me, get into his room right now. I said, no, get the fuck away from me. And eventually I told him to go fuck himself. And that isn't something that you would say to somebody who basically had been your drug dealer for months on end. So next thing I knew, I was being drugged through the house. He raped me. I waited until he basically fell asleep on top of me in the midst of this, and laid there until I could figure out how I was going to get underneath him without waking him up and having him hurt me more. At that point, I knew that there was a gun in the nightstand, and I seriously stood at the end of the bed that night contemplating whether or not I would shoot him in his bed. And I think I probably would have if it wouldn't have been for knowing that I had a little niece at the time that was being brought up by my sister and living with us. And I knew that if I wasn't there, she didn't have somebody that was like a big sister because she had lived with us since she was a baby. And so
she lived with who? Who did she live with, Elizabeth? You said she lived
My niece lived with me and my mom.
Oh, okay.
And so I knew, so that kind of came into my head, and it was enough of a, I think at that point, the sense of reality was so blown away that when that little piece came into my mind, it was enough to click me back into reality of, holy crap, what the heck is this? So I had to quietly go through the house. I had to try and figure out, how am I going to get home? I lived in Minnesota. This was in Wisconsin. It was only roughly about 15, 20 minutes from my house, but it was the middle of winter, so I knew that I couldn't walk home because it was...
Miss Elizabeth?
Yeah?
Let's go forward, if you don't mind. And
okay.
Let's see, you were 17 then. What happened after you got away from all the abuse and you're in your 20s? Did you work or were you able to support yourself?
So after
how did all the abuse make you feel? I mean, what were some of the feelings that you were having as you were dealing with all this and trying to make it in life?
Horrible. I mean, there was times that I thought, you know, there must be something innately wrong with me. I thought I was dirty trash that would never amount to anything. I do have to say, after that experience, I never told anybody of any of this. Never spoke of it, never talked to anybody about it. I did try to tell his sister, but his sister, when I tried to tell her what had happened, had put blame on me, saying that I was crazy and this sort of thing. And at that point, to be honest with you, I shut the door to it. I shut the door to all the pain that had gone on through my childhood and teens years. I went on with life. I started working. I did get into a domestic situation where I was dating somebody who, I think I repeatedly was picking people that were bad for me, because I think you pick what you think you're worth or what you're used to. And so I got into a domestic situation, which then I got out of and basically shut the door. Eventually I got married and things were good. And raising my children was the best part of my life. And I went on to be what I thought was a good Christian woman, raising three kids. And then at a certain point in my marriage, my husband and I started having conflict. We started to argue, and things got pretty rough. And eventually that brought us to counseling, to where
Well, did you tell your husband that?
I never did. He suspected something because, of course, because of all that, I had a really hard time with sexuality. So there was always, he suspected something because when we try and be sexually intimate, I would break into tears. I literally had spent years disassociating during the time we were making love and that sort of thing. And he never did. He suspected that there was something. He knew that there was one situation, but never to the degree.
Okay. So counseling didn't work at that point because none of this came out in counseling when y'all were going to counseling.
Well, when actually I say life started to really truly begin for me, because it did come out in therapy, but it came out in a really odd way. When we went to counseling,
What age were you at that point? Because you're not going into 2013, right?
Pretty much. I mean, now we're being brought up to, I ended up going into therapy in 2012. That's when we started going for.
All right. So can we stop right at this point and go down the panel quickly?
Okay. Sounds good.
Our time is going fast. So we're going to be coming up on the 30 minutes pretty soon after 15 minutes. So we're going to ask the panelists, since there's so many, to make a brief comment or question, okay?
Sounds good.
Darlene. Okay, Darlene.
Hello there.
Hi.
I had the same type of problem being intimate towards my husband, but I probably could have done better had he treated me right as well. I thought really he was going to be different. So that made it hard because the trust was then, the trust wasn't there anymore when he was abusing me as well, you know. So I'm not sure if you went through that as well with your husband or not.
I didn't hear the last part of what you said. I apologize.
Okay, was he abusive with you as well?
Not physically, it was more mentally and emotionally, financially. So I was a stay-at-home mom for 25 years, basically. And
That's the same thing I was in.
Yeah, the same situation you were in, is that what you're saying?
Financial and everything, you know. So it's like you're basically in prison, and then you start making friends and try to visit them, and then he tries to manipulate. Well, you don't do that either.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I had, I used to have at one point quite a bit of friends, but when I got married, a lot of those friends fell away. A lot of them didn't support the marriage. They didn't like who I was marrying and that sort of thing.
Maybe in a way they knew really how he really was. That's what I think about a lot of things, because a lot of people have told me, you're too good for your husband. You deserve better than that. And this was before he started beating me.
Well, so sometimes we don't see it.
Right. And it takes someone else,
okay.
Or even a pet will warn you sometimes, you know. Well, thank you so much for sharing that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Darlene. Thank you. All right, we're going to go down to, and we're going to come back to Penelope. Penelope, I'm sorry I skipped you, but we're going to Mary Haven. Mary Haven?
Thank you, Elizabeth. My question is, as you look at this today, do you see any of the parallels between your husband and those people, those other men who abused you? Can you see where those things that happened to you, were attracted to him?
I think, you know, I'm careful to say too much about it because he is the father of my children, and for that I want to give him a certain amount of respect for that, but I do feel that he was somebody that wasn't healthy for me, and I think that due to the abuses that I went through growing up and not having healthy relationships modeled to me, I think that led me to pick people that weren't going to hold me in the regard that would be a healthy relationship.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
Janice?
I just have
Janice,
one
you're
question.
On.
I have one question, Elizabeth. When you were 14, 15 years old and going through that, all that you've described, did you not have anyone at all that you could confide in the pain that you were having?
No. I think I described it one time to my therapist as dead man walking, that's how I felt going through my life. So I guess I never felt that there was somebody that I could say something to, because there was so much blame and shame that I put onto myself. And at that time, I truly felt that I was nothing, that I brought this stuff on, that it was my fault, that basically, I mean, there was times I'd think I was a spawn of Satan. So, I mean, to tell somebody was just so scary. And I don't think at that time I even thought that it was a possibility.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
thanks,
I'm glad,
Janice,
you were able to go forward. You're welcome.
Thank you.
Sybil?
Hi. I'm just kind of mulling over Elizabeth's story. It's the first time I've ever heard her story. And I'm surprised, because you sound so much like all the rest of us, you know.
Absolutely.
Not, you know, in your reaction, like one of the things that's helped me the most the last couple of years, I mean, I've had counseling, I mean, just for ages, you know, all kinds of counseling. And one of the things that's given me so many breakthroughs has been hearing other people's stories, reading the articles, and finding out that the way that I reacted was kind of normal. Like, I didn't understand why I would do the things that I did. And I just want you to know, sometimes when I look at the things that you say, I mean, I just thought that maybe you were a therapist.
Sure.
maybe you are, but you just seem so informed and so supportive, and you bring so much educational materials. And I just had no clue that you were going through the same things that we were. And I just wanted to, like when we got on and people were saying, oh, you know, you're not alone. Everything's okay. We're here to support you. And I'm thinking, hey, this girl's got it together.
And I guess sure.
We all struggle. We all go through the shame. We all go through the relationship things. And I just really identify with your story. And I just want to thank you for sharing it. And I thank you for being so transparent. And I just want to tell you, I don't even really know you, but I'm proud of you.
Thank you.
I'm proud of the positive hope. You know, you give people hope and you give people tools, and you just have had a positive impact on our lives. And I just want to say thank you. And I also have trouble accepting praise, so I get it. I didn't mean to make you uncomfortable.
No, I really, that's so sweet. You know, I'll tell you, it's kind of like when somebody giving you gifts. That's been something that I've really had to learn how to receive, because of course, when you grow up in abusive situations, you learn really fast that somebody's idea of a gift or kind word could, before you know it, end up to being rape. So I learned at a very young age that there was always a price, that there was something attached to that. So to then suddenly in my 40s learn that, you know, hey, that isn't the way it's supposed to be. You know, I mean, thankfully, which you're going to hear in a little bit, things got better. You start to unlearn all the garbage that you learn due to abuse, and things do get better. But took a lot of therapy and intense therapy to get to a better place, that's for sure.
Thank you, Sybil. Journey, and that you've been willing to.
We're going to Mary Ellen in New York.
I don't really want to take up too much time because I'm really enjoying your story, and I know you've got a lot to tell. I'm really anxious to hear where you're at this point, and obviously, you're doing amazing work for many people. And,
thank you. And
I really, really am happy to be here listening tonight and sharing with you.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Mary Ellen. Thank you, Mary Ellen. All right, we're going to go back up to Penelope. Before I open Penelope's mic, though, I want to read a little bit more about your bio, because we're way behind in time, and that's what happens when we have so many panelists, may not be able to go through the panel again. But in 2013, at the age of 32, you broke your silence, and that's an
42.
Amazing statement. Yeah, 42. I broke my silence, and it says, what I wanted to share with you is just last night, what we were talking about, how did telling your story help heal you, okay? And so you talked about being forced into telling, then you went into the hospital, then you got diagnosed, and then you're saying it's the best thing you ever did, it was the hardest thing you ever did, and now you're empowering others. So I'm just going to read that and open Penelope's mic before we go into that. Penelope, go ahead.
Oh, thanks, Pamela. And you know, just like Mary Ellen said as well, I don't want to take up too much more time because there's so much more of your story, Elizabeth, that I'm really interested in hearing. But one thing that you said that really struck me, everything really struck me, and I felt a lot of similarities there, but you said target on my back.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that feeling. And, you know, as you know, or probably read, the CDC released a study today finally confirming 1 in 3 women are sexually abused in their lifetime. Well, we knew that. We knew it's probably more. And
mm-hmm.
I thought,
mm-hmm.
you know, do we have a target on our back, or is it just so common, and I think it's so common, that I don't know if we necessarily have targets. I mean, certain things, like you said, you know, that the people that we attract, people that we become into relationships to, because, you know, we know what we know, and we accept what we know until we know better. But I wonder, you know, does someone really have a target on their back, or is it just that it's so pervasive, and the more that you speak, like you are tonight, the more courage that people have to come forward. And I think it's more than 1 in 3 women. So I don't know the answer to that question. You know, did you have a target on your back? Did I have a target on my back? Or is it just...
No, I don't think we did. I think because of growing up in dysfunction and having things happen at a very early age, I think it sets us up for more abuse later on. But no, certainly none of us have a target on our back. It may feel like we do, and I think sometimes mm-hmm. our feelings can betray us. But it's, you know, unfortunately, there's predators in the world that see a child who's a little more emotional, a little more sensitive, and that there's a, you know, maybe adults in their life that aren't necessarily, you know, as involved as some parents. And I think they go after that. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, we were on the receiving end of a criminal act.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but definitely it can feel like we have targets on our back.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you. And I wish I could speak with you. I have so many other things to say, but I'm going to stifle myself now, and I'm interested to hear the story. Thank you.
Well, it gets better. Thankfully, it gets better.
Before we get back to your story, though, I want to bring up the concept of core beliefs, and that's what I think it is.
Absolutely.
More than targets. Right. So once we've had repeat cognitive beliefs about ourselves and others, you know, they become markedly impact our behavior and strongly influence ongoing cognitive appraisals about ourselves and the world. So, you know, our belief system, from being raised by monsters and going from monster to monster, I mean, you know, what do we know other than that? So I'm going to turn it back over to Ms. Elizabeth, and she's now going into her breaking her silence and what happened from that point. Then we're going to break a little bit, and we're going to then go to what she's doing now.
Okay. Well, so eventually the marriage started to really break down. I started to see that it got to the point where I actually was becoming very, very suicidal. And at a certain point, we got into marital counseling at my suggestion. And as we were going through, the therapist kept asking about childhood. And I never wanted to talk about the childhood. And at that time, I didn't even know why I was crying, but I kept breaking out in tears. And at a certain point, the therapist said, you know, why are you crying? Every time there's a mention of childhood, instead of sharing, you're crying. What is going on? And I had told them, I said, I don't know. And it was, I went home from that meeting, and all of a sudden, there was so much adrenaline going through my system and everything else that the next week, it was the day that I was supposed to be going back to the therapist with my husband at the time. And the kids went to the Catholic school at that time, so we had Mass in the morning. And I was at church. And before I went to church, I noticed I just had all this energy inside my system, just this high anxiety, this like I can't get calm. I can't you know, everything felt really out of control. And so I started to think about that meeting, and I started to get angry because I thought, why does he keep bringing up childhood? Let's just focus on this. So I wasn't understanding where all this was coming from, what was going on. So I wrote on a little card that morning before I went to Mass. I had it in my head that I was going to give the therapist this note as we walked in, and it said, don't ask me about my childhood anymore. That was, because in my head, I thought, I'm going to be smart. I'm going to give them this card, and then that person is going to stay away from that piece of my life, and everything will be good. So I go to church with the kids, and a certain part in the Mass, I started to feel like this energy within me was growing and growing and growing. And next thing I felt like I'm having a heart attack. One thing led to another. I ended up in ICU with a heart rate that wouldn't come down. And I spent 2 days in ICU. And during the course of that time, it was just 2 days of dry heaves, of not being able to get my pulse down, just not functioning. And at a certain point, a male nurse came in who had been probably one of the, it was so profound. He came in and he looked at me and he said, everything that has led you to today is for a reason, and you need to start dealing with whatever this is. Now, he didn't know my story. He didn't know anything, but he knew that I was in the hospital and I wasn't calling anybody. And to this day, I'm not sure why I didn't call anybody. Maybe there was a subconscious thought that something was coming. I don't know, but I had to tell my husband, because of course I wasn't going to be home to make dinner. So I had to say, hey, you know, I'm in the hospital, but I never told my family, my extended family, or this sort of thing. So ended up in there being monitored. Eventually I was able to come out. And when I came out of the hospital, I went back to the therapist. And at that point, I started to have, it was like all the PTSD that I had been suffering through my whole entire life but didn't know the name for it, just went into overdrive and ended up in the therapy, had to tell the therapist what had happened. And it was that night that the therapist took my husband out of the room, brought me back in, and I literally, for the first time, spoke and said that I was raped. And that's when everything changed. I spent 2 times a week in intensive therapy. I started out at first just going 1 time a week. I had 2 different therapists. At a certain point, we realized that I needed more therapy than that. So there was times I was literally in therapy 5 hours a day, 3 hours a day, just because I was having a hell of a time functioning. I started having constant flashbacks, would go days without sleep, intrusive thoughts. And, you know, in my adult life, I had never done drugs or alcohol. That was something that after the last rape when I was 17, I stopped. I stopped all drugs, all alcohol. I totally shut the door to that. But when I started in the healing process, because I would go for days without sleeping, literally all day long was intrusive thoughts of the different rapes. It was the flashbacks. It was in that time that I actually reached out to the gal who I had been molested with back as a teen, and I called her up drunk out of my gore, crying, saying, this is the things that are coming into my mind. Can you please tell me, is this true? So she actually ended up, and I don't know if she brought me through all of it or not. I don't know if there's some that hasn't been talked about yet, but, it wasn't until that time that she said, yes, that's what happened. And she went on to tell me that night they dropped us off at a certain spot and we walked the rest of the way to her house and cried the whole way. And then we never spoke about it. I don't have any memory of ever getting out of that car. So I needed her to help put to tell me certain things, which in turn triggered the heck out of her. So she started dealing with her stuff for the first time ever, because we had never spoke of this. So fast forward, we're doing therapy twice a week. And at that point, I'm married. I have 3 young kids. I'm trying to figure out how can I keep my wits about me when I'm literally having flashbacks and hanging out in the upstairs bathroom, locked in a closet, knowing that my children are all on the, next floor down. And I have to come out and try and act normal. And so I was going to one day a week EMDR, another day a week doing cognitive behavioral therapy mixed with some other types of therapy. And at a certain point, my therapist said, hey, I think you need to go. Also, we need to get you in a type of group therapy. And I thought, you've got to be crazy. How can I possibly go into a group type of therapy? It took me 40-something years to tell you. How do you think I'm going to go into a group of people and tell them? Because at that time, I thought, it's bad enough I'm telling you this stuff, but if I tell anybody else, they're all going to know how rotten to the core I really am and how horrible of a person I am and how dirty. And then they're going to think, if she had this done to her, is she going to abuse our kids? That's the kind of thoughts that I was going through as a mother at that point. And then all the other stuff that goes along with being a mother that was abused or having PTSD. There's, I could speak on a whole hour of just parenting with PTSD. And I think what really brought out the trauma... What's that?
Pamela, it sounds like to me you were scared of the stigmatization of having gone what
absolutely.
Gone
absolutely. And at that time, I had no idea how prevalent sexual abuse was. I never knew it was 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys. And of course, we know that it's a lot more than that because most of us never tell. But I had no idea. And so this was, I was in some really intense therapy, and I literally in therapy am thinking, okay, I'm going crazy. I'm going nuts. I'm never going to be the same again. They're probably going to haul me away and take my children away. I mean, I was convinced of that. Eventually, okay. Thankfully.
Okay. Yeah, let's get to where your healing journey. Now,
all
know,
right, because that's the good part.
Yeah, we're ready to
We need the good part, don't we? Thankfully,
absolutely.
All that stuff doesn't define us, right? I mean, thankfully, we do
that's
get to
fine.
Move forward, and we get to find healing and that sort of thing, which thank goodness for that. So it was during that time where I started to get healthier. I started to learn what boundaries were, started to realize, that what I needed was a healthy situation and I wasn't going to have that in my marriage and da 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 da. And so I started to really start living a healthier life, creating boundaries, learning. And at a certain point, when I started to realize the reality of what happens to people that have never processed their trauma, there was something inside of me that was angry. And I can remember one day I was on the phone. It was coming out of a I had had a flashback, had the therapist on the phone. And I said, if this is the kind of stuff that goes on, if I could be a normal person and all of a sudden I'm back to being 4 years old or 13 or 17 or 15, and I am front and center right back in there again, I said, if this stuff's going on, we got to talk about it. This can't be. And, of course, right. At that point, you know, I'm thinking we got to start. I mean, I'm like, I want to march to the freaking Capitol. I want to, you know, because this is crazy. I'm thinking, how can this happen to so many people? So I started researching, started doing all this, and eventually got the go-ahead from my therapist because they're like, whoa, you got to just hold off a minute, and you need to get healed up to a certain degree before you go and tackle this. So let's just do a little bit more than you can. So at a certain point, I got the green light. I called a local reporter, and I go, look, I need, is there any way you can do a story on sexual abuse? Because I'm just finding out all this stuff, da-da-da-da-da. So that was my first real coming out was, hey, this is what happened. Well, I didn't know that it was going to end up into a full page, front page article on one of our major papers here, which ended up being a shock in itself. And next thing I know, I'm getting calls from different people in the United States, because by this time it's 2015. I'm getting calls from different people in the United States. They're like, this happened to me. And I can't believe that you were that open about what happened. And so with that, it just gave me more energy to where I thought, we got to do something about this because I can't even believe. And I thought, I have suffered by myself for so long. And I told my therapist, I said, I don't ever want anyone out there to have to suffer like this by themselves, because I never thought I'd make it through the healing process. I had tried to commit suicide during that time. I figured there's no way I'll even make it to the other side of this. I'd see other people that were further on their journeys, and I'd think maybe they got that far, but I'll never get that far. We've got to start something.
Miss Elizabeth, we've got 15 minutes left in your show. Can you believe that?
No, so I better get talking fast.
What I want to ask you, I've got a question. What is a peer-led organization? What is that, quickly?
So that means peer-led is that it's not a mental health professional. It's people with lived experience. They're using their own experience of victim to survivor to thriver and education to help other survivors. So anybody who's involved with our organization has been sexually abused or had a member in their family be sexually abused.
Perfect. So it's kind of like NAFTA, you'd say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the thing of it is all the research out there is showing how important it is to have this peer support, because, therapists can take us to a certain level, but it's really sitting with another person that's been there, done that, that really, I think, helps in the healing process. So at that point, I started doing a peer group at the local library. It morphed into us needing bigger space. So then I went to another place that was an AA facility, started doing groups out of there, and eventually we have the offices that we have today, where we were offering in-person peer support groups. We had workshops, classes, and then an annual conference for people that were sexually abused. Now today, fast forward. Due to COVID, most of our stuff is online.
The name of your organization?
So the name of it is Empower Survivors, which if you go to www.empowersurvivors.net, you can see what our programs are, see what it's about. So now today we offer, because of COVID, unfortunately, we can't do in-person groups yet, what we used to do. So all that's kind of put on hold for right now, but now we do Zoom meetings. So Monday nights we have something, it's a program called Conversations with Evie and Elizabeth. Evie is a fellow survivor, also an author, and does just monumental work at the organization. I mean, she's been a huge help. We have a program on Monday night where we bring a guest on or a topic of the evening. So maybe we're talking about nightmares, PTSD, sexuality, or having a guest, maybe a therapist or something else on, just talking about different things that are trauma-related. Thursday evenings, we have the peer support group. So we have people from around the United States that will join in. That's more of a support meeting. We did have Wednesday morning, but with COVID, I think a lot of people that morning time was hard for people to get to due to change of schedule and that sort of thing. So we aren't doing that quite so much.
So let me give you a scenario, and which will kind of give you a role play of, say I'm finding myself very, very anxious, okay, and I know about your group. So I come on to your Zoom meeting, and I don't know anybody, okay? And I'm already got a whole lot of anxiety, okay?
Absolutely.
Tell me how it works.
So how it works is the first thing I always tell people when they're new to the group, we go through guidelines at the beginning. Basically, what's set in group stays in group. We talk about supporting one another in love and respect. I always tell survivors that come, the biggest step you made was to make call along or just showing up. That's the biggest step you can make, is showing up. And so I always tell people when they come to the group, know that we're all here to support you, but never ever do you need to feel that you have to talk. So if you need to sit there for 6 months and just observe and listen, then that's what you do. We meet you where you're at. So there's, correct, you need to be able to feel that that's a safe place for you and feel that these people are people that you can open up with. And so safety's huge. So, but I think a lot of times when people come to the groups, and I know what it's like to be coming to a meeting for the first time. It is one of the scariest things you can do for yourself, but it's also one of the best things you can do. But I think for a lot of survivors, when they come to the groups, they're able to say for the first time, oh my gosh, there are people that understand me. There's people that I don't even have to tell them my story and they get it, because they understand the feelings. They understand the hardship. They understand all of this. I mean, it's scary, but there's hope. And I guess the biggest thing I want to leave people with tonight is, we spent a lot of time on the childhood stuff, but there's a heck of a lot of hope, and it does get better. And if anybody's out there listening tonight and they're in that realm of not being able to sleep, having constant nightmares, intrusive thoughts, flashbacks, know that if you continue to stay in the game, it will get better, and those will eventually, the waters will calm. But, boy, you really have to go through the sludge before you get to the other side. And like I said, I'm still learning today, but life is so much better. I would have never thought in a million years that it would get better. Excuse me.
Okay, say, here I am again, and I'm wanting to come on, and I've heard what you said.
But I have a dissonance, which I'm saying to myself, I want to go on, but I don't want to go on. Okay, how do you get a person to think, you know, it's better to go on than not go on? How do you break that dissonance in the person?
I guess one of the things I always tell people is that we're always here for you. If you're not ready to come into the group now, that's okay. You're going to come when you feel safe. And I'll ask them at that time, you know, if you're not ready for the group situation, would you like to just talk one-on-one? Sometimes okay. What I'll do is, you know, I mean, there's times I've spent 2 hours on the phone with a fellow survivor that maybe has never, ever told a single soul. And the first step is to have that conversation and you know, and then they may take a while. I have survivors that I've talked to them for a year before they've come into the groups, and that's okay, you know. But once they're in the group, pardon?
I said that is okay. I have people that have waited and waited, and they're just like little puppy dogs that have been injured, right? You have to just wait them out. Yeah.
Well,
because
it's scary.
It's very scary.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to be vulnerable because we knew growing up when we were vulnerable, things happened. So, you know, a lot of us, we're not going to want to put ourselves into a vulnerable situation like that. So it's really understandable why somebody would be scared to come. I mean, I used to think that even if somebody saw me pull up to the building where I was going to go in for therapy, that somehow everybody would know that I had had rape throughout my life and would think things. That's where I was at then. I mean, I was somebody who wore my sunglasses in every therapy session, which made it really, really hard for them to know when I was disassociating, you know? So, I mean, it is scary, but it does. It gets better. It's just, it's really important that survivors have support. And oftentimes they aren't going to get the support from their friends and family like you'd hope that we would. Unfortunately, a lot of people can't understand what it means to be a survivor unless you're a fellow
okay.
survivor. So,
Miss Elizabeth, we've got 7 minutes. And I'm going to open each person's mic, and we're going to go down the list, and they're going to make a comment and say goodnight to you. And we're very happy you came on tonight. So we'll go down.
Well,
to
thank
Mary
you. It was a pleasure.
Up. Yeah, Mary.
Are you talking to me, Mary Havens?
Yes, ma'am. Yes,
ma'am. Okay. So, Elizabeth, as I was listening to you, I am so proud of you, too. I think I think I've told you that many times. But I was thinking, you know, I have two daughters who don't want to join me in the recovery mm-hmm. that I'm in. And I think about you. You are my daughter's ages. And I think the thing that I always looked at was that I had this problem, and I wanted someone else to take the champion the a program that mm-hmm. I thought would be useful. So what I'm realizing tonight is that you are my daughter's age. You are such a remarkable woman, and I want to thank you so much for coming on the show, and I'm glad that I took the time to come and listen. So we will talk soon, Monday night probably, so... Thank you again.
Well, that would be wonderful. Well, thank you so much, and you inspire me too, Mary. You've done plenty of work yourself and have books out there.
Okay. Janice?
Elizabeth,
do you have something?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is the first time I've heard your story, and so I'm just amazed at where you were and where you are now, and I think that it is great that you have established yourself to help others. So I wish you the very best as you continue on this journey.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you for coming tonight.
Sybil?
I'll just say amen with all the other ladies. Appreciate you, Elizabeth. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you, too. Thank you for being part of Empower Survivors, Mary too.
Mary Ellen in New York.
Yes, I want to say thank you so much. And one thing that did just stick in my mind was when you commented about spending a lot of time going back as a child before you could get to the whole success of what you're enjoying now. I think there's times when we think we can skip over that, but you are definitely proof that you have to go there, those pieces, and move forward. Let that be
thank
healed.
You.
Yes, thank you.
Absolutely.
All right, Penelope?
I have one word and then I have three words, but I'm not laughing, Elizabeth, because, you know, obviously none of this is funny, but I know we sometimes use humor just to break things up a little. I've used that word sludge. So walking through the sludge, it's just, I think the healing is just harder than the actual event, at least that's for me, it was. And when you said sludge, I'm like, oh my gosh, yes, it is sludge.
Mm-hmm.
That was wild. But the other three words, you are amazing.
Oh, thank
you
so much.
Yeah. And I get it. It's easy. And one day I asked myself, how come it's so easy to believe the bad stuff but not be able to accept the good stuff that people tell you? But you really are amazing. So I just wish to thank you for coming on the show tonight. I'm so proud to call you my NASCA sister. And thank you for accepting my friend request on Facebook.
Oh, absolutely.
And I also just filled out the form to join your Empower Survivors group. So just I'm beyond my minute, I know. So I'm just, again, thank you from the bottom of my heart.
Yeah, find us on Facebook for sure. And check out the website.
I will.
Thank you.
Elizabeth.
Thank you, Penelope. Thank you for coming on the show, Elizabeth. Thank you, Penelope, for being the co-host. And please leave us a nugget before you leave, Elizabeth.
You know, I say the biggest thing is just make the call. When you're going through hell, keep on going, because this is hard work. It's really extremely hard work, and you have to dig through all this and unlearn all the lies that we take in. And we have to learn what healthy is, what boundaries are, what life is supposed to be about, and then go after it. But if you're on that journey and you're struggling, keep going. Don't listen to the lies and the negative self-talk that tells you you're never going to make it, because you will. But it's going to take good support. It's going to take some good therapy, some good peer support groups. And it's going to take you showing up to your own healing journey and being your own hero. And you're going to do it. You will.
And with the support of groups like Empower Survivors and NASCA, we are going to make it. Okay, so I'm having to end the show tonight. Thank you again, everybody, from the guests to our panelists and co-hosts. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night, all.
Elizabeth, thank you, Pamela.
Blog Talk Radio.